This is the second lecture, or actually the third lecture in the human reproduction unit, the second lecture on the female reproductive system. And before I begin, I just want to remind you all that this particular lecture is quite complicated. There's a lot of things going on, but I actually did spend quite a bit of time preparing this lecture, and I think that I've simplified it as much as I can, and I've made it as clear as I can. So hopefully you'll benefit from that. The first slide sort of walks you through all the different key organs, glands, and the hormones they release. So we'll begin with the hypothalamus, which is at the base of the brain, and the big hormone that it will release in regards to this particular system is called gonadotropin-releasing hormone. Can everyone repeat that? Gonadotropin-releasing hormone. And you can see here in my illustration on the right, there's the hypothalamus, and you'll see green lines and red lines. The green lines indicate positive influence. Red is sort of a negative influence. So you'll see a positive influence in an arrow going from the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary as a result of gonadotropin-releasing hormone. The anterior pituitary, of course, sits right below the brain. There's a little stalk, and then there's the gland, and it releases two hormones in response to the gonadotropin-releasing hormone. And these two hormones are luteinizing hormone. Let's all say that, luteinizing hormone. And follicle-stimulating hormone. Let's all say that, follicle-stimulating hormone. Very good. And then those hormones, in turn, affect the ovary, which releases two hormones as well. One of them is estrogen, and one of them is progesterone. Let's say estrogen and progesterone. Very good. And then the uterus, which is also part of the female reproductive system, doesn't actually produce any hormones. It's only affected by them, and specifically, it's affected by estrogen and progesterone. And so you see on my picture, they're all listed there, all the organs, glands, and hormones. Okay. On the next slide, we begin our story. And the interesting thing about this story is I scoured a number of AP Bio books for what I consider to be the best graphics, and I found this particular graphic in a rather obscure book, and at the time I was looking, this was, in my estimation, this was the best graphic I could find that illustrated everything I want you to know. And what's nice about it is if you look, you'll see that there's actually four different illustrations. The top shows you the level of pituitary hormones, which, we're referring to the luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone, shows the relationship of those hormones and how much exists in the female during the 28 days. And then right below it, you see the ovarian cycle. And so you'll see the 28-day ovarian cycle illustrated really nicely. You see the follicle growing and ovulation and so forth. The illustration below will show you the levels of ovarian hormones, which include estrogen and progesterone, during the 28-day cycle. And then the very bottom picture will show you what's happening in terms of the lining of the uterus during those 28 days. And what's really cool about this whole illustration that you see with is that it's labeled, or it's numbered. So it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's correlated with my lecture. So you'll see, if you go back to my lecture after today, you can go and look at number 1, and it'll correlate with number 1 on the picture, number 2 correlates with number 2 in the picture, and that'll make it very easy to kind of make sense of all this when it's done. In addition, on every slide in this PowerPoint, you'll see that, this illustration with all the hormones and the ovarian and, uterus and all that. You'll also see the original picture that I showed you, which shows you the relationship between the hypothalamus, anterior pituitary, ovary, and uterus, and then all the hormones and their feedback. And so between these two illustrations, you should be able to pretty much piece it together. So fasten your seatbelts, here we go. We'll begin with the hypothalamus, which, as I said, at the base of the brain. And what it's doing is it's continuously releasing gonadotropin and releasing hormone 24/7, unless it's prevented from doing so by some other hormones. And most notably, this would be progesterone. However, if you look down here on my, you know, my feedback picture, you'll see that both estrogen and progesterone negatively feedback to the hypothalamus. And that basically tells the hypothalamus to turn off the production of gonadotropin-releasing hormone. Now, the anterior pituitary, in response to the gonadotropin-releasing hormone, will release FSH and LH. And remember, they release it into the capillaries, which means it goes into the cardiovascular system. And it, you know, essentially the way it works is the gonadotropin-releasing hormone is released into the capillary bed, which then goes down, you know, through the, you know, the pituitary stalk into the anterior pituitary, which then causes the anterior pituitary, the cells there, to secrete FSH and LH, which in turn go into the capillary bed and therefore into the cardiovascular system, which then go throughout the cardiovascular system and affect the target cells that they affect are in the ovary, and they stimulate the follicle to grow. And so that's number one on the picture that you see there. FSH and LH stimulate the follicle to grow. In the next slide, we talk about the developing follicle. So what happens is, as you see in the picture, FSH and LH influence the follicle cells. They start growing, but then the follicle itself begins to produce a hormone, which is estrogen. We talked about this yesterday. Estrogen, in turn, and you can see here, the levels of estrogen begin to rise in the first part of the cycle as a result of the growing follicle. You know, because the follicle gets bigger, it produces more estrogen. And we know that in turn, rising estrogen levels cause the endometrial lining of the uterus to grow thicker. Okay? Now, here's an important concept. Throughout most of the cycle, estrogen inhibits the release of gonadotropin-releasing hormone by the hypothalamus and FSH and LH by the anterior pituitary. If you look at my little feedback loop here, you'll see red lines going from estrogen up to anterior pituitary and red lines going from estrogen up to the hypothalamus. So you can see that it negatively feeds back and inhibits these hormones that are coming from the hypothalamus and anterior pituitary. In my next slide, I talk about day 12. Now, this is just one of these crazy, crazy things. And you just have to accept it. I don't know if there's any logic to it. I don't know if there is. It's just the way things are. So sometimes it is what it is. Accept it and go on. But on day 12, things radically change. And what happens is, the estrogen levels get so high that what happens is that estrogen influence radically changes. In fact, it's non-intuitive, it's unexpected. Don't get confused by it, just accept it. What happens is on day 12, estrogen switches its role from, and rather than being a negative inhibitor of LH, FSH, and gonadotropin, releasing hormone, it actually does the opposite. It now positively stimulates the hypothalamus and positively stimulates the anterior pituitary, and what results is a surge of LH and FSH around day 12. Now, that's counterintuitive, doesn't make sense, but that's the way it works. And you can see that illustrated on the picture below. You'll see that coming from estrogen is, on the left-hand side of my illustration, is a green line. Green line refers to positive influence, and it goes to the anterior pituitary into the hypothalamus. And there's a little description there that this particular effect happens on day 12. Now, if you look over to the right, you'll see that there's, you know, you can see estrogen going up, 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 up. And then what you see, if you go and look at the pituitary hormones, you see this amazing spike in luteinizing hormone and a pretty big spike in follicle stimulating hormone as well. The LH surge is much greater than the FSH surge. And what that does, you'll see on the next slide, that essentially the LH surge causes several things to happen. We're not quite sure what FSH does, but we know that LH causes it. First of all, remember that the primary oocyte, which was diploid, was sort of suspended in animation at the beginning of meiosis one. Remember prophase one. And what happens is when this LH surge occurs, it causes the primary oocyte to become a secondary oocyte. In other words, it causes it to go through meiosis one, going from diploid to haploid. It triggers that. Now, remember, I told you yesterday in the previous lecture, I said right before ovulation, 8 to 10 hours before ovulation, the primary oocyte becomes a secondary oocyte. This is what causes it. It's the surge in luteinizing hormone that causes that change. And then about 8 to 10 hours later, you get this final explosive growth of the follicle, which results in ovulation. Okay, so now you see why it happens on day 12. So you kind of get this, because day 14 is technically when ovulation occurs. So within about a 48-hour period, you get all this crazy stuff going on. And you can see that illustrated over here on the right. We're still on the same slide, and we're looking at number 5. And that's when ovulation occurs. And what's interesting is, not only does ovulation occur due to luteinizing hormone, but what's very interesting is that the follicle is converted. The follicle is a bunch of cells, right, that was surrounding the primary oocyte. Those follicle cells start turning yellow, and so now they sort of they morph into this like new tissue, which is this yellow body. So we give it the name yellow body, corpus luteum. Interesting. So now you understand where the word luteinizing hormone comes from. It's literally a surge in luteinizing hormone that causes primary oocyte becoming secondary oocyte, ovulation, and the follicles being converted into the corpus luteum. So when you're literally forming the corpus luteum, that's why it's called the luteinizing hormone. Very cool. In the next slide, we talked about what the corpus luteum does. So you can see that the corpus luteum is this nice and big structure inside the ovary, and it starts secreting massive amounts of progesterone and estrogen. Now remember, the follicle was secreting estrogen anyway, but now the corpus luteum is not only secreting estrogen, but it's also secreting progesterone. And if you look at the ovarian hormones in the graph down here, you'll see that, look at those progesterone levels. They start to really go up, as well as estrogen levels, okay? And also, what's interesting is that these high levels of progesterone and estrogen will now negatively feed back to the hypothalamus and the anterior pituitary, causing LH and FSH levels to come down. And you can see up in the pituitary hormone graph that LH and FSH levels are coming down dramatically. And what's interesting is, because you have decreased levels of LH and FSH, that's going to prevent the development of more follicles. Because obviously, in order to have more follicles, you need follicle-stimulating hormone. What's interesting also is, because the corpus luteum is pouring out all this progesterone and estrogen, that those two hormones will affect the wall of the uterus, and so the endometrium, which is the wall of the uterus, begins to stimulate and grow bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, the reason why, of course, is because ovulation has occurred. This little secondary oocyte is taking a trip down the fallopian tubes, hoping to encounter a sperm. And if it does, then you'll form, fertilization will occur, you'll form a zygote, And in a few days, that zygote is going to arrive in the uterus, and it needs a place to grow. And so the uterus is getting ready for that. It's anticipating fertilization. Okay. Number eight, on the next slide, you'll see number eight. About a week after ovulation, the corpus luteum, as you can see here in the picture, begins to disintegrate. And what's interesting is that it's really the architect of its own destruction because, remember, it secretes progesterone, right? And progesterone, if you look in my little picture down here, progesterone inhibits the release of luteinizing hormone. Well, the corpus luteum can only persist in the presence of luteinizing hormone. So it kind of ends up stopping its own, sort of ending its own life. Interesting little point I want to make. There's one other hormone that will prevent the corpus luteum from disintegrating, but it is produced by the developing embryo. So we'll talk about this in the next lecture in more detail. But basically, after a week, if there is no embryo formed, then the corpus luteum will disintegrate. If an embryo is formed, then it starts producing a different hormone, which feeds back to the corpus luteum and prevents it from disintegrating. So essentially, if pregnancy occurs, the corpus luteum will be there inside the ovary for 9 more months, cranking out progesterone and estrogen. Okay, so that's important to know, because those hormones will keep the endometrium lining nice and thick. And of course, if there's a little developing embryo in the uterus, you want to keep the endometrium lining thick. In the next slide, we look at number 9, and what happens in number 9 is, as a result of this disintegration of the corpus luteum, because the corpus luteum is producing lots of estrogen and progesterone, these levels of hormones start to decrease. So estrogen, you can see, is decreasing, progesterone is decreasing, and this decrease in both of those hormones obviously influence the endometrium. The endometrium basically dies off, and then it needs to be shed. And so the blood and tissue that make up the endometrium are shed, and that, you know, sort of represents the end of one cycle and the beginning of the cycle again, okay, as we talked about yesterday. So, as I said yesterday, when the shedding of the endometrium lining of the uterus occurs, that's day one of the menstrual cycle. It's also day one of the ovarian cycle. Essentially, they're lined up. Finally, I think this is my last slide. It turns out that with the loss of the corpus luteum, like I mentioned, and therefore the decrease of progesterone and estrogen, if you look down at my little picture here, you're no longer inhibiting the anterior pituitary. You're no longer inhibiting the hypothalamus. So what happens is the gonadotropin-releasing hormone is released from the hypothalamus. That, in turn, influences the anterior pituitary. And now there is an increased release of follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. And once again, those two hormones initiate the growth of the follicles in the ovary, and the whole process begins again, you know, the next month. So that's kind of the whole system. I think it's one of those things where maybe the first time through it's a little overwhelming. I think if you run through it another couple times, and you might want to just sort of, you know, I would recommend just taking a piece of paper and trying to draw these two illustrations and kind of label them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and write what happens and why. And if you do that 2 or 3 times, you should start to really get it in your brain. But like I mentioned, when my students come, you know, I get emails from students a couple years later, you know, from college, and they will tell me that when they're learning this, the female reproductive cycle, and this whole system in their college class, oftentimes they're just completely confused. They come back to my website, they look at my lecture, and then they send me an email and they say, thanks, I get it. Yours makes so much more sense. So, like I said, it took a lot of time to put this together. It may seem confusing, but in reality, I think it's about as clear a presentation as you're going to get anywhere. try to simplify it, but not too much. Okay, that's it.